This is Embodied on the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anisha Rao. Can you do a condom demonstration over Zoom? What about inclusive, comprehensive sex education? As educators struggle to get through core curriculum and online classrooms, sexual health falls to the wayside. So where does this leave students who are navigating their changing bodies? Today, we will look at the gaps in sex ed brought about by the coronavirus pandemic. Joining me now is Elizabeth Finley. She's the Director of Strategic Communications at Shift NC. It's a nonprofit dedicated to improving teen and young adult sexual health. Elizabeth, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Anita. Thanks for having me.
You were with us for our very first episode of Embodied, where we talked about sex ed in North Carolina and looked at the landscape. So just remind us what it looks like under normal circumstances. When do students get it, and what does it look like?
Sure. So under normal circumstances, students are supposed to get sex education in North Carolina in grades 7, 8, and 9. That education is supposed to be fairly comprehensive in nature. So schools are required to cover abstinence, contraceptive methods, STI prevention, and also some things around sexual abuse and assault prevention. The reality of it, though, is that it's an untested subject. It's an unfunded subject. And so it's not always taught in full, and it's not always taught everywhere. Those are local decisions, and different school systems provide it to different levels.
Right. There's no statewide curricula, so the curriculum can differ county by county. Parents can also opt out of getting kids sex ed. So in this moment, what have you been hearing from teachers about sex ed and remote learning? Is it happening? How important is it?
And for the most part, it's not happening. What we've found is that schools have undertaken this massive effort to shift to virtual learning, to transition content, to shift delivery, and even to think about the overall needs of more vulnerable students. And all of that is extremely important. But it also means that they're focused almost exclusively on core subjects. So how do you get kids up to speed on math, on reading, even how do you provide them with healthy foods to eat? Health education right now isn't really in the mix. And even speaking as a parent, I'll own up to the fact that there are weeks when writing and math are a struggle, and we're not even thinking about the specials and the work that we're handed off to do, so the art, the PE. So parents should understand that health education isn't likely to happen right now, or even for the most part for the spring semester. And when we're talking about sex education, that's what happens in grades 7, 8, and 9, as well as fifth grade puberty education. Most schools we've talked to have canceled those classes entirely. Some of them were able to begin instruction in the fall, but haven't done the spring sections. A few of them say that they may try to do makeup classes when they get to the fall semester, but nobody quite knows what that fall semester is going to look like.
So, I mean, it's understandable. There's a lot that teachers are working through and navigating, but I wonder, I mean, what this means for students. When we talked last year, you mentioned that oftentimes this curricula can be a way that conversations are introduced around consent, are introduced around understanding your changing sexuality, maybe you're changing gender identity. So I wonder for you, when you think about students not having access to this right now, what concerns does that bring up for you?
Yeah, so people learn about sex in a number of ways. That's always been the case. That's the case even in the pandemic. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. The role that the schools play that's so crucial is schools are the place where kids get a lot of medically accurate facts. So understanding the range of different contraceptive methods available, understanding in sort of an age-appropriate and setting where they're in there with their peers, things around consent and relationships. Understanding what different STIs are. And so where in the best case scenario, students were learning those facts from the schools, also having conversations with their parents, maybe engaging in some community-based learning through different nonprofits or health departments or places like Planned Parenthood, they're missing that facts piece. And so there's a much heavier lift for parents to do.
So if students were learning about birth control in sex ed, for example, and then decided, you know, I want to go on the pill, I've learned that I can have access, is that still something they're able to do on their own now from home? Or how does that work if maybe they're doing it kind of trying to advocate for themselves without necessarily a supportive parent?
Actually, we've seen our health providers do a really good job of trying to pivot to this new world where we're not necessarily supposed to go in person to get health services. Lots of providers have done a great job of using and incorporating telehealth services. DHHS, Medicaid have done a really good job of trying to think of how to fund those at the same level that that they're funding in-person services, which is great. What we've done with providers is help them understand how to provide those services to teens. We've also done some work to help inform young people and parents of what services are still available. So if you're out there and you need birth control, you need an STI test, maybe you have an IUD and you're at the end of that IUD's life and you need to have it exchanged, absolutely contact your health provider. I know that lots of people are hesitant right now to engage with health systems because of the fear of coronavirus or because they've heard that there's so much focus on testing or treatment of people with the virus. But absolutely reach out to your health provider. They will have a way, either it's extending the prescription that you already have or talking you through your symptoms, doing a telehealth appointment. There are also online resources for some of those services. So there are services where you can subscribe exclusively online to have birth control pills or STI tests sent to your house.
Interesting. So, I mean, yeah, you're bringing up the fact that, you know, a lot of the healthcare coverage right now is focused around making sure people are aware of how to keep themselves safe in light of COVID-19. But I wonder, I mean, does this present any interesting opportunities for parents and kids to have conversations about other kinds of health concerns and use this moment or time to talk about sexual health in a different way?
I certainly think it does. So, you know, anytime we're together more, we have more opportunity to talk. And so some of those conversations could be just, you know, normal topics that haven't come up yet. My 7-year-old asked me, you know, if a pregnant woman eats a potato chip, could the baby choke on the potato chip if she's pregnant?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, so maybe we're just like having weirder and more frequent conversations with each other. But even thinking about the virus itself, it's a rare moment in history to think about viruses and have some shared understanding about how viruses work, how other illnesses work. And so So we know from health educators that there are some ways to take those and transition them to a greater understanding of sexual health. So the idea that wearing a mask protects your own health and other people's health, that can translate into an interesting conversation about why we might wear condoms. Talking about the concept of asymptomatic carriers, that people can look healthy and feel healthy but still transmit something or test positive, in this case for coronavirus. The same is true with many STIs, or the idea that the only sure way to know whether you have something is to go to a doctor to get a test and know your status is, again, something that folks who have worked around HIV and other STIs have known for a long time. And so I think as we emerge from this, the things that we pick up in this moment in history can help us all have a better understanding around sexual health and talk more frankly about it.
Well, it's interesting. I've been thinking a lot about that as well, just in navigating conversations with friends about having to be really open. You know, if you're going to see someone to say, you know, this is who I saw recently. This is kind of the network of people I'm seeing right now. So there are a lot of parallels in being able to be open and forthright in how you communicate about your actions and understanding the influence it may have on other people. That's really interesting. I would love to turn now to talk a little bit about a specific controversy around trans students being outed or being called by their dead name because of this online system that schools are using, this PowerSchool system. Could you describe that for us?
Sure. So PowerSchool is the system that North Carolina schools use to connect to students, and it's been really crucial as they've transitioned to virtual learning. One huge challenge for young people who are transgender is that school automatic or that PowerSchool system automatically populates a legal name and not necessarily a preferred name. And that could be a legal name that the student has used for, in some cases, their entire educational career, in effect, outing them to their fellow classmates or other people who might view that system. And so lots and lots of people have reached out to the Department of Public Instruction asking them to change that. Our understanding is that as of earlier this week, there's no official response from the superintendent, but there are some indications that DPI's technical staff and policy teams are maybe looking into it. There have been some state school board members who are really supportive of making this change and take it very seriously, but ultimately there hasn't been a change yet. And what that does is that fear of being outed is a big barrier to full participation in education right now for LGBT students. And we know that participating in education right now is hard enough as it is.
All right. Well, lots more to cover there. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Elizabeth Finley is the Director of Strategic Communications at Shift NC. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Anita.